And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 186, coming at you at a Tuesday evening, wrapping up our starting pitcher reviews with part three, ADP 61 through 90, talking about some, you know, breakouts as well, and seeing where we could find any gems named Paul Skeens, like we did last year. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, man. Had a 3-day weekend, which usually is good, and happy belated Veterans Day out there to everyone. But it was a rainy 3-day weekend with two little kids in the house, and it was Tuesday. Today was it was nice and quiet and silent, and I worked, so it wasn't that bad. So I'm refreshed and I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. See, people think I can be kind of, you know, sarcastic and rude at times, which I can be, but
sometimes, not rude, sarcastic
for sure. I was watching the news, the weather, because that's what I do. Weather affects my job a lot, so I watch it pretty much daily. And I saw this front coming into the northwest of the map. Decided not to text Ryan and ask how his golf game was, because I figured it golf season's over now for Ryan.
Yes.
And I saw that because we got some rain on Monday, actually, about a half an inch, which is a lot for us this time of the year. Like, obviously nothing what you got, but I was watching the forecast. I saw like the big swell going up that way, and I'm like, oh boy, Ryan's gonna be bummed out here. It's a rainy season. Yeah, coming this way.
We did the old faithfuls, the winter spots in Oregon, the indoor trampoline park, the indoor playground, all those stops along the way. So
beautiful.
It was good.
Yep. Well, good. Yep. We're rolling here. We got starting pitchers coming at you tonight. We're going to record the next episode, but drop it for you. Won't be live this week. Ryan is taking
my voyage.
Yes, but I don't call it a fault. I'm jealous because he's taking a voyage, which he can talk about, but that'll be relief pitcher review, and that'll be our final review. You'll get that dropping for you guys on Thursday. So
Friday
covered on that. Oh, Friday. Sorry. I'm used to recording on Thursdays, drop it on Friday, but you guys will have your normal two episodes this week. Just the next one will not be live per se. I'll let Ryan elaborate if he wants to, but after that, we're going to start moving our angles towards 2025, folks. So it's about that time of the year.
Yeah. Excited for right. So this week is kind of the end of our 2024 look backs and wrap ups. I know you're drafting already. I'm itching to kind of turn the page, but yes, Thursday, I am off to Atlanta, Georgia, randomly to go see Tennessee take on the Georgia Bulldogs Saturday.
Very jealous.
My best friend and I from college, my college roommate, we make it a point. We both almost 40 now, both have two kids. So it's hard to keep in touch. We make it a point to go to one college football game together every year. So this is where we picked, and so flying out Thursday, no show, live show. It will drop on Friday morning when I am somewhere in downtown Atlanta or Buckhead somewhere.
Yep, getting ready to probably go watch a Hawks game and enjoy.
There is a Hawks game. Yeah. There's a. Did I text you that? Yeah,
you told me that. Yeah.
We're trying to figure out stuff to do on Friday. We're going to go to the College Football Hall of Fame in downtown Atlanta, which will be really cool. But yeah, my buddy texted me tickets to a Wizards Hawks game. And no offense to listeners out there who are NBA fans, it's all good. I couldn't name a single player on the Hawks or Wizards, not only this year, but for a number of years. But we may still do it anyway. It's like a in-season tournament game, so the court's painted.
Started tonight. Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know. We might do that if we get bored, but we'll see.
Yep. Either way, you'll have a great time. College football, there's nothing like it, not to mention two top eight SEC schools. Like, you're in for, as you know, but for listeners, he's in for quite the evening. Game day in town. Ryan's going to have some fun. Yeah. So jealous. Can't wait to hear about that next week when we start talking 2025, seeing where that all goes. But we're here to get you going on the final starting pitchers. Again, 61 through 90. And some breakouts. So, Ryan, without a further ado, like we said, we're not going to bug everybody all the time with certain things. We'll leave those to other situations. But let's talk starting pitchers. So what do we got cooking tonight with your wonderful board?
All right. Wonderful board. Thank you. This is This is the last of the three for starting pitchers. So ADP 60 through 90 from preseason. So this is roughly picks like 210 to 310. So starting to get to the kind of the late middle slash end game. And very interesting that it was actually quite fruitful. We talked a little bit how like 40 through 60 last week was pretty bad. There were a number of pretty good breakouts. We got a couple of good listener questions. We'll kind of weave these in throughout, but you know, were there any common themes and whatnot? That's kind of the, you know, among those breakouts, that's kind of the point to why we look back at these. Is there any kind of common theme or takeaway we can use as we start to prep to 2025? But yeah, this is basically the same concept as previous shows. We've got our preseason ADP and then the end of season ranks with the color coded stats. And there's good amount of Oregon Duck green. Like not that much rare steak red. I mean, there is for 60 through 90, but it's not what I expected.
Yeah, because remember, for the listeners, if you've been listening to the previous starting pitcher reviews, the color coding here is for all starting pitchers. So like the first show we did was a lot of green because it's the top, you know, 60 pitchers. You'd expect more green there. The second, we had 31 through 60, a lot more rare steak red on that one. Not a whole lot of green. There was a few, but not a ton. Like you said, a lot more at least green to Oregon Duck green, like light green to Oregon Duck green here. Well, it could be Oregon Duck depending on what weekend it is, and it all pans out for you on this one. So it'll be fun to see where we go here, and we'll kick things off with the lefty that came over in a trade at the deadline and continued to deal for the Houston Astros. That's Kikuchi. He finished 64th at the position with an ADP of 213, 405 ERA, 1-2 WHIP. Doesn't sound that appetizing. But 206 strikeouts in 175 and two-thirds innings pitched. And if you look at the underlying metrics, dude was pretty lights out this season. Like almost reinvented himself, even though he was like probably better statistically, at least from ratio standpoints in 2023. As an overall fantasy pitcher, probably better in 2024. So when you look at Kikuchi, going to be a free agent, that'll be fun to speculate on going forward. But what's your thoughts here? You finished 64th of the position, 61st off the board.
Yeah, and has kind of, I want to say, kind of reinvented himself in terms of like he's now, we had worried about the volume with Yusei Kikuchi in previous years, but 167, 175 innings in each of the last 2 years for him. So Kikuchi has kind of suddenly turned into a pretty dependable starting pitcher who can handle that workload. And the biggest thing with this season's 2024's spike in workload was that trade. I mean, that's the story for Kikuchi in 2024, right? Was the trade to Houston and pretty much entirely changed up his pitch mix, mostly ditched his curveball, threw a ton more sliders, 35% sliders in August, 39% sliders in September. Obviously Houston saw something there and it worked wonders for Kikuchi. So that was the big thing for Kikuchi is not only did he maintain and kind of take that workload another step forward, but he did so while kind of being a beast in the second half and tweaking that pitch mix and really kind of going off with Houston. So hell of a year for Kikuchi. It feels like he should have finished higher than 64.
I was kind of surprised by that as well. Maybe it's the 9 wins, that'd be my guess. The 9 wins,
yeah, that's a good point. Nine wins for a full season of a 405 ERA. You kind of think you'd get a few more than that. So that's probably it. And really on the season, the ratios were kind of league average. It was just that the strikeouts were so good for Kikuchi. But you look at that second half, and again, not to nitpick, but you take those second half skills with that new pitch mix, who knows with the new team, wherever he signs, what carries forward. But this was a really good, I'd say, borderline SP2 down the stretch for Houston.
Yeah, if you like Kikuchi, you're kind of hoping he signs with the Astros. Because
just
they did magic with him. Like, just come home, come back to where you were, and let's have some fun with you. So, we'll see. Because the biggest thing with Kikuchi for years was like you could see the skill from time to time, but the walks were always such an issue with him, and he gave up the long ball a little too often. And so it's kind of one of those, which pitcher are you going to get? And like you said, it got better in 2023 and 2024, especially once he went to Houston, which was just a game changer. So that was a totally fun transition for Kikuchi, and helped a ton of fantasy teams down the stretch.
We've got Michael real quick. Michael in the chat. Second half, Kikuchi was seventh in baseball, strikeout minus walk rate, and had a 107 whip. So, yeah, he was maybe SP2 is selling him short for how good he was down the stretch.
Yeah, he was automatic. Like, you just locked him in, didn't look back. He had, like, maybe, I thought I had one bad start. So, with the Astros, which was pretty solid from August 1st onward. All right, Gerrit Cole started the season on the IL, so it dropped them down to an ADP of 227, the 62nd pitcher off the board, and shocker, finished 63rd at the position. 3.41 ERA, 1.13 whip, 99 strikeouts in 95 innings pitched, but there's more to the Gerrit Cole story, Ryan. If we just look at yearly trends, yeah. Gerrit Cole is trending in the wrong direction, and that is a massive concern for myself. For others in the area that have been tweeting about it and whatnot, maybe for you, I won't speak for you. But if we're talking 2024, it was a good year. It was also one of those years where you weren't just confident to throw him out there all the time either.
Right. And I think the ADP, remember, circle back to when we got circle back. Like, I work for a corporation. Circle back to early 2024 when we did not know, you know, how much Gerrit Cole we would see. I think if before the season you said you'd get 95 innings out of Gerrit Cole, I think this ADP would have been much earlier than a 227, which is where Gerrit Cole settled in late March. That being said, I don't think folks expected this to kind of, I don't want to say a shell of himself, but this was not the Gerrit Cole that we're used to. And in those trends you mentioned, Bubba, for me, it's the velocity and the strikeout rate. Once those two things start going down and you tack on kind of the injury, injuries behind it, it's a problem, right? Gerrit Cole, the swinging strike for Cole down from 14 to 12, down to 11. The strikeout rate the last 4 years, 34, 32, 27, and then 25%. That's barely above league average. So, and Gerrit Cole is not a chipper chicken anymore. So it's just hard to see once these pitchers with a lot of miles on an arm like Gerrit Cole has, it's hard to kind of reverse that ship. So a decent year for Gerrit Cole, but man, it's ugly if those strikeouts don't come back.
Yeah, that's the conundrum. If those strikeouts aren't there, if he's not dominating, we got big boy problems. Now, his last start in the World Series was very good. The fifth inning, not his fault. So he looked really good there, but the starts up to that in the postseason still weren't like dominant at all. So
he could have covered first.
That was his fault, yes. But in reality, it shouldn't have come to that. He should have been out of the inning already before that ground ball took place. Agreed. All right, the 63rd pitcher off the board, ADP 229, Gavin Stone, finished 62nd at the position, pitched great. He's not pitching in 2025, though, because he had shoulder surgery and is out for the season, but solid 2024 campaign.
Yeah, solid year. I would argue there was a good amount of good fortune. Had a yes. Pretty low BABIP and a pretty high left on base rate, 80%. When league average on that's like 72, so that tends to kind of even out. But yeah, good year for Gavin Stone. But not much we can really take away. The changeup for that guy was awesome and threw it 27% of the time. So that was good. But yeah, we and if we're also talking takeaways outside of just Gavin Stone. Like, the elephant in the room here is the LA rotation, right? Yep. Like, this was just another LA starter who could not. And hey, they won the World Series, but for fantasy, it's like, man, these guys were freaking landmines in the second half.
They're already talking 6-man rotation next year.
Yeah,
to limit work, to limit that? Workload, yeah, to limit right. Workload.
How long do you think that lasts?
Well, that's what I made the comment to somebody. They're like, oh yeah. I'm like, yeah. Everyone says that until week three when you've already lost a pitcher and have nowhere else to go. Like, the Dodgers were throwing bullpen games, so let's just be real about the 6-man rotation here.
And that's not even just a Dodgers thing. Nobody can hold a 6-man
rotation. Yeah, as I said, everyone. Like, for,
I mean, it's just so
there'll be at least 5 or 6 teams that come into spring training, so they're going to have a 6-man rotation. And yeah. Has anybody seen one succeed for more than a month? Like, no. It never does. So I don't foresee that happening in LA. That's for darn sure. But we'll see. Time will tell. It makes sense with the injury histories they have, but I don't know. All right, this one will be fun because this is one of your boys. Nick Lodolo, ADP 232, drafted 64th at the position, finished 89th. Lodolo had a 4.76 ERA on the year with a 1.2 whip and 122 Ks and 115 innings because he just could not stay on the mound.
He could not. I mean, he kind of could. 115 innings is.
Yeah, he had a window where he was pitching.
He had that weird. I mean, more than half the season is a pretty wide window, I'd say. Dude, you're a Lodolo hate. I can already tell. You're like smiling that he sucked.
No, I love the skill sets of him, but, you know, the injuries just are bonkers at this man.
Yeah. And the injury stuff was really weird with Nick Lodolo, because remember entering the season, it was like, I mean, I want to say, I mean, I'm getting old, my memory is whatever. Want to say, like, as close to 2 or 3 weeks to before opening day, it was like this guy could not pitch. Like his legs, yeah, his legs were all messed up.
The same injury that ended the previous season was still not healed.
Yes. the leg injury. And he still went out there and did 115 innings that I would argue were actually pretty good. You mentioned the 4.76 ERA, the Sierra, which is our skills ERA kind of estimator of choice, was a 4-run lower, 3.78. Pretty good K minus walk, 17%. That's you know, not elite, but that's pretty solid. It was a lot of BABIP and strand rate stuff. But again, this is someone who does pitch Lodolo in Great American Small Park, as you like to call it. So you do wonder, like, is this just going to be a thing with him while he's pitching there? But I'm back in again on Lodolo next year. It's just it was a pretty rough year, and I don't know. Yeah. You're happy.
No, I don't never want to see anybody get hurt. I'm just more like, it's more chuckling and just the weirdness of the situation. That's the best way I'll put it. It was just a conundrum. The skills are very good with Nick Lodolo. I will not deny that at all. But it's just
the curveball is like a thing of beauty. I love watching that thing.
Yeah, any lefty with a nice curveball, I'm a fan of. So exactly. We're good in that regard. All right, the 65th pitcher off the board, ADP at 235, finished 97 at the position, and this feels odd that he finished 97th, but the whip could do something to this. Is Mackenzie Gore, 390 ERA, 142 whip. That'll crush you with 181 strikeouts and 166 innings. And it's weird. He was so good to start the year, and then it just kind of unraveled on Mackenzie Gore. But then you like look at the underlying metrics, you're still like, dang, he was still pretty good. Like, we got something we could work with here. He just couldn't put it all together, and the whip just crushed him when all things are said and done.
The whip crushed him, but the whip is
who he is. It's
who he is. So, yeah. I mean, we say 142. It was 140 the year before that, 147 in 2022. So that's kind of what you're getting with Mackenzie Gore. The walk rate's not, like, terrible, but it's certainly below average. The big storyline for me with Mackenzie Gore, like, I thought he actually was elite in September. He had 28 innings, 35 strikeouts to 10 walks, a 1.26 ERA, and a 0.8 whip. Like, this thing did unravel in the second half, and I had Mackenzie Gore in Tout Wars, and I was like, well, here we go again, because Mackenzie Gore, throughout his entire career, A, has not been able to stay healthy for an entire season, and B, if he did get deep into the second half, it completely unraveled, and it looked like that was what was going to happen again in 2024. I don't know where this September surge came from, because June through August were god awful, but he legitimately looked pretty good in September. I don't even think I was starting him in Tout Wars for a lot of that September, because I had given up on him. So kudos to folks who kind of righted the ship there. You did have some tough months, but was kind of random, but encouraging to see a strong September finish from Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, it's really tilting, because it's like March, April, and May, ratios were solid. Like, literally for March, April, and May, he had a total of 17 walks and 72 strikeouts.
Yep.
And like 60 innings, get like roughly. And then June and July got destroyed. August got a little better, like palatable. And like you mentioned, September was just domination yet again. So in reality, he had like 3.5 good months and 2.5 rough months, which to me, if I got to look at like the bright side here, dude's 25, and we've seen improvements every season. Now, the whip, we have not seen improve. We've seen ratios improve. We've seen, like, he went the longest. He's 166 innings is the most starts of his career, so on and so forth. Could he make a pitch mix change? There's a lot of what ifs when it comes to Mackenzie Gore. I think we can all agree the skills are there with Mackenzie Gore, and he just feels like one of these years he's going to put it together. I could be just overly optimistic. Like Uncle Ted says, DJ Hurs. I'm a huge DJ Hurs fan. We talked about that. I think you even are somewhat interested in DJ Hurs. I won't speak for you, but we've mentioned his skill set looks very good as well. teammates, should I say. So maybe they can figure something out together. But like, I wouldn't just write Mackenzie Gore off as type thing, because just the way he, and then like you said, the way he finished was, I think, the most important part of the season for a young pitcher. He kept it, he showed a change, and I haven't dug into it at all, and maybe your numbers will show it if you do a board or whatever. Maybe he made a big pitch mix change for the final month of the year. I don't know. Like, there could be something to that, but I think there's more to it, but it is weird the ratios are. But remember a guy that the ratios are bad for forever until things clicked, maybe a new ballpark helped? Luis Castillo used to be golden for like a 1.3 or 1.4 ERA, mm-hmm. no matter what he did, like no matter what. And all of a sudden, look at him now. So we'll see.
And that's the thing with Gore. Like, the walk rate has improved every year he's been in the majors. He went from 12 to 10 down to 9. 9% is not bad. The league average is 8. Like, you can kind of live with that. So there is, you know,
his BABIP's gone up. 340 BABIP last year.
Exactly. I don't want to say BABIP for every single player here, but it was pretty damn high. Like, Mackenzie Gore should not have probably had a 1.42 whip, probably more in the upper 20s, 1.30, yeah, something like that, which is, again, given kind of the ERA was good number of Ks, that's palatable.
And where you're drafting him, he's your SP5. 6, like that place.
Yep.
All right, won't spend too much time on these guys, but that one, he's just a player I still believe in, so I'm kind of biased. He's like my Nick Lodolo, I guess. We'll go to the 66 starting pitcher off the board, ADP of 241, finished 198th at the position, and that's one Griffin Canning. Spent a lot of time not pitching well, but finished the season a little better. Helped that he faced the White Sox. But a new home in Atlanta, that's fun. But 5.19 ERA, 1.40 whip, 130 Ks overall, just disastrous season. No,
this was bad. This was bad. And I know we're going to talk about Jack Flaherty later, but I was hyping Jack Flaherty all draft season, yet here's freaking Griffin Canning going 25 picks earlier, and I have so much more Griffin Canning on my teams than I did Jack Flaherty. And Griffin Canning, it was a train wreck. Yes. It was an absolute. I have nothing else good to say about Griffin Canning at this moment of time. It's still fresh in my head.
Yeah, no, I will be back. But yeah, that was rough last year. Indeed, we were in on a lot of Angels pitchers, and
I know who was the other dude.
There's Jose Soriano. Jose Soriano.
No, I didn't even know who he was before the season. Jose Suarez last year. Silseth. That's who I'm thinking of. Yes. Was in on Silseth too, and.
Yeah. Jesus. It was rough across the board. All right. You know what was rough across the board? A guy that got paid and couldn't even pitch in the postseason. Marcus Stroman, ADP at 244, 67th off the board, finished 151, a 4.31 ERA, 1.47 whip. This guy's usually a whip god because of his ground ball rates and everything. 113 Ks, another just disastrous start. Like, I want nothing to do with Stroman to begin with, but this probably could have been better for some, but this was bad.
Yeah, and it was just as bad beneath the hood. The K rate was down 4 points from 21%, which is still below average, to 17, which is like awful. Did not miss any bats, like one of the lowest swinging strike rates of any starting pitcher last year. And I think probably most importantly with Marcus Stroman, we think of him as this like elite ground ball rate guy.
Not last 40, year.
49%. Last year, which is still like well above average. But if you're Marcus Stroman and pitching to contact and doing all that, that ground ball rate needs to be
Framber Valdez-esque.
Exactly. It needs to be Valdezian.
Yes.
To make that work. And Marcus Stroman, man, this was a major step back for Stroman from a skills perspective.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if he gets like DFA'd by the Yankees or something, because if he can't pitch in the postseason and all this stuff, and he got no options. Like, they got no room at the
end.
He's
got a pretty big deal, doesn't he?
Nah, he only got like 8 or 9 mil. He didn't. Let me double check. It wasn't. It was a friendly deal, because I think everyone was kind of out on Marcus. No, I was wrong. He was 2 for 37, so about 18.5 mil a year. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Never mind. It's no Jordan Montgomery, but it's pretty good. So yes, he might be.
Yeah, but if you're getting comp to Jordan Montgomery already, that's a bad thing too.
Yeah, and he has a 2026 vesting option if he's got those 140 innings pitched. I don't think he's getting there this year. Just gonna throw that out there to everybody. At least not with the Yankees. All right, the next one off the board is enticing. Gavin Williams, ADP of 247, 68th pitcher off the board, finished 144 with a 4.86 ERA, 1.37 whip, and 79 Ks in a whopping 76 innings pitched. Missed a lot of the season due to injury. Came back, and he had a couple good starts, more bad starts than good, obviously. I don't know, though. I'm kind of a sucker here. 24 years old, be 25 next year, and I think there's still a lot of skill in that arm.
Yeah, I do think you could have said the exact same thing last year, and this was not a step forward for Gavin Williams. And you can maybe, yeah, toss it all away because it was injury, did not make his debut until July, but like, he wasn't as bad as a 4.86 ERA, but he wasn't that much better. Doesn't really have like a true out pitch. He threw a new cutter this year, which was effective, but doesn't really have a secondary that puts guys away, which is kind of weird for Cleveland because that's not really their MO. Usually they're that like bad fastball, but just lean and pitch backwards and throw those secondaries. And Gavin Williams is not that. So I don't know. I just feel like Gavin Williams, you're drafting hope, and we haven't really seen much from Gavin Williams on the field in his admittedly small MLB sample.
Yep, that is the problem. Small MLB sample. A pitcher that threw very well this last season before getting hurt and making a little appearance in the postseason was Reese Olson. 256 ADP, 69th pitcher off the board. Finish 86, 3.53 ERA, 1.18 whip, and 101 Ks in a whopping 112 innings. This was really, really solid stuff for where you drafted him. Problem was is he only got you a little over halfway through the season before you had to move on from that one from Reese Olson. But all in all, really strong season from Reese.
And didn't he have like, because it was along with Flaherty, have like an awesome ERA in the first half with like no wins?
Yes, very, very similar. Yeah, him and Flaherty were like dominating the rotation and getting absolutely no love. Like, I got it right here. The first
half. In May. Check out May, dude. He gave up. He had 28 innings.
0.64 innings. 0.64
ERA, and he won one game. He hit 3.18 in April and didn't win a game. Good Lord. So that'll
crush you.
Yeah. When you win four games all year, that'll crush you. Reese Olson, right, like, kind of limping to the finish with the injury and that sort of thing, that's a problem. But this was a pretty good year for Olson. Yeah. Ramped up the whiffs, ramped up more ground balls. You know, I like both of those. Just didn't really get rewarded for it from a fantasy aspect.
Yep, very much so. All right, here we go. One of the first big boys of this page, and there's a few. Feels like there's, like you said earlier, kind of more love out of this, like just results wise than before, but the eighth overall pitcher in 2024 was ADP 263, 70th pitcher off the board, Seth freaking Lugo. 3 ERA, 109 whip, 181 strikeouts in 206 innings pitched. Don't forget, in 2023, he threw 146 innings and had not thrown 100 innings since 2018. Basically been a career reliever, it felt like. And goes to Kansas City and just shoves every start. Felt like he was going 6-7 innings easily, and put together one of the eighth best season by a pitcher.
Yeah, kudos. And I'm probably going to sound salty here in my analysis of Seth freaking Lugo, like you call him, because I did not have any.
I had a few shares, but not as many as I wish I did.
Well, yeah, sure. I wish I had more than zero, but no. I mean, hell of a year, and kudos to anyone who had Seth Lugo. Like, these are the types of picks. You'll hear me mention this all the time when we start doing our preview stuff. If you can nail two or three of these pitchers in these middle late rounds, like you are, that sets you so far ahead, even with like a first round bust. Nailing two or three of these guys at this point in the draft is just key to a championship run. And Seth Lugo was absolutely that. That said, my guy ran
very pure,
very pure. The last four seasons for Seth Lugo, the K rate, and some of this was as a reliever. So 28% as a reliever in 2021, then 25, and now he's a starter. 22% for Seth Lugo in 2024. Didn't miss many bats. Like, the home run luck was absolutely there. And maybe there's something deeper than all this that can, you know, maybe this thing that Kansas City can develop these pitchers and know something that we can't see. I certainly open myself up to that, but everything I'm looking at is like, this was just a year long heater for Seth Lugo, and the volume was there and everything else kind of fell in place. So kudos if you got Seth freaking Lugo, but you may be calling him Seth freaking Lugo again next year. The other connotation.
Yeah, we'll get to his teammate, another old school guy that managed to throw well. Like, there's something in the water. We talked about Cole Reagans earlier a couple shows ago. They got something brewing with these pitchers, at least this past season in Kansas City. All right, the 71st pitcher off the board, ADP of 264, finished 127th, and honestly, surprised he finished this high because of the wins. James Paxton, 4.4 ERA, 1.45 WHIP, 73 Ks, and basically didn't pitch after the Dodgers let him go in the midseason.
Yeah, and RIP. Right? Did he retire? He didn't die, but he retired, right?
Yeah, he did retire. Yeah, the White Sox will hang a jersey in the clubhouse for him.
Yeah. Now, cool career for James Paxton. I do wonder.
The Big Maple. Yep,
the Big Maple had some awesome years with Seattle. You do wonder what that career would look like without injuries with Paxton. You could say that about a bunch of pitchers, but James Paxton was really, really good for a few years there when the Big Maple thing came to fruition. But in terms of 2024, it was all that kind of early Dodger luck and wins that kind of buoyed this, but it fell apart rather quickly.
Yeah, I'll never forget the eagle chasing him down in the outfield.
during warm-up, landed on his shoulder.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, Jesus Christ. And it wasn't a trained eagle, folks. That was the crazy part about
this guy is like a legend in two countries. He's Big Maple, but he's also like American patriot for having an eagle land on his shoulder.
Yep, he's a crossover. It shows that there's hope in this world after all. All right. Maybe if it's never mind. 72nd.
Continue on to Braxton Garrett.
Oh man, 72nd pitcher off the board, ADP at 265, finished 135 in the position. That is Braxton Garrett, 5.35 ERA, 1.19 WHIP, 34 whopping strikeouts in 37 innings. Never made it back in the season, as I kept thinking he was getting close to coming back. Yeah. It never happened, and he already had a setback. It felt like early in the offseason, so I don't know what to expect, but it's a bummer. These pitchers in the Marlins system, there's a few of these teams, Dodgers, Marlins, Rays, that just can't keep these guys healthy.
I don't have much to add with Garrett. I mean, total loss season. You're at 37 innings. You're not really looking at anything. Great pitcher. I think he's really good, as my min pick from 2 years ago would lead you to believe.
Yep.
But yeah, the injury updates going on and on is a really good point. We kept waiting and thinking Braxton Garrett was coming back, and it just it never happened. But I agree with our guy Uncle Ted in the chat. Massive talent for Braxton Garrett. Just needs to get healthy if he can.
Most definitely. The 73rd pitcher off the board, ADP at 266. John Gray finished 132 at the position, nearly the same as Braxton Garrett, ironically, with a 4.47 ERA, 1.31 WHIP, 86 strikeouts in 102 innings pitched. He was hurt, pitched, then had a groin injury, and it just never really came to fruition for John Gray, a guy that we talked about streaming quite often on Fab shows and then eventually just pulled the pin on that one. So what's your thoughts on Gray's 2024 season?
This is another one where I'm kicking myself for having a bunch of John Gray and not
the back after
priority coming up. Yeah, coming up next. But John Gray, honestly, dude, like we may forget, he had a sub-2 ERA in both April and May.
Yeah, he was good.
Like he was pretty legit for a while. Yet only. So this is why I kept saying kill the win all season. Two wins in those 2 months with like a 1.5 ERA and 9 starts of it. I don't know how that's possible. Yes, went on the IL. I think like it was a knee.
He had a knee and then he had a groin. It was a knee and then a groin the second time.
And then according to HQ, right foot neuroma. I don't know what that is. That doesn't sound good.
I think he got hit by a line drive back at the mound in the foot, if I remember correctly. Could be wrong. Doing the daily shows, I kind of have a rough idea, but I speak out of my rear end a lot too, so...
Neuroma, benign tumor that arises from a nerve in his foot. So, I don't know, maybe.
Maybe not. But yeah, either way. What could have been with John Gray, let's put it that way, if the injuries didn't spark up, because like you said, the start of the year was outstanding and then just never happened. And, well, I don't know. He's getting older. do we buy back in? Because remember, it was a couple of years ago, we were all excited, leaving Colorado, coming to Texas, and like, here we go. And then it just never really got to where we hoped he would, basically.
Yep, and now issues are, I think, a pretty major part of the equation. But, yeah, I mean, he certainly wasn't as good as a sub-2 ERA in those 2 months. But, I mean, nobody is. But
he's no Seth Lugo.
He's no Seth Lugo. He can't do that for 6 straight months. But he was still effective when healthy. So I still think in terms of, like, 2025, I'd take a late shot on John Gray. It probably ends up as a streamer in most leagues. Effective one, maybe.
Should be, yeah. But definitely for the price tag, he's worth the chance. That's no doubt about that. One guy, and this is funny because they're going right next to each other. One guy was my guy. One guy was your guy. Your guy was a lot more, I guess, I don't know, sneaky is the right word, but we'll get to him. Sean Manaea, my guy, ADP at 267, the 74th pitcher off the board, finished 21st at the position, 3.47 ERA, 108 whip, 184 strikeouts, and 181 innings pitched. Changed the pitch mix. I saw Pitching Ninja do like a side-by-side, essentially the same delivery as Chris Sale now. He changed all that up. That was pretty cool to see. I was loving Waka because, like, if you guys remember last year's show, he was with the Giants. He hated everything about Gabe Kapler doing the whole opener thing. He was pissed. And then when he finally got to start the last month of the year, pitched really well, I was like, okay, he's leaving town. Let's see what he can do at his ADP. And better than I expected, I'll be honest. Didn't expect this from Sean Manaea, but he pitched very, very well, and curious to see where he signs. But a big boy season from Sean Manaea.
Yeah, I was going to try and twist that Giants knife in a little bit more at you, but you already did it. So
yeah, I got it. I like to hate on myself. It's okay.
No, it was that kind of like famous story now of Manaea just watching Chris Sale when the Mets played the Braves and was like, "Let me try a lower arm slot." And from first half to second, it was pretty much midway through the season. From first half to second half for Manaea, the K to walk went up from 13% to 18% in the second half. Swinging strike went up a full tick. So a very nice finish for Sean Manaea, who by the end of the season was like, was just rolling and part of that Mets surge in September. So yes, also very interested where he lands. And obviously he picked up a new skill just by watching someone, and that's what makes pitching so freaking hard, man. That's why I say, like, when pitchers can reinvent themselves and change so quickly, Sean Manaea, I think, is like a perfect example of that. And from a projection standpoint, like, how the hell do we deal with that? How could we have projected that Manaea just randomly tries to he watches Chris Sale one day and then randomly tries to lower his arm slot and instantly becomes like a top 20 starting pitcher? It's what makes this game maddening, fun. Insert adjective here.
I guess it's one of those, and most of these guys, if they're pitching in the bigs, had a great skill set to get to the bigs.
Sure. We,
let's not forget, like, Manaea was one of these studs for Oakland for years, and they just kind of like fell apart. And so figuring out a new way to reinvent himself, again, not to this level, most likely, but to reinvent himself to be a serviceable pitcher, maybe we should have thought, giving him a little more credit in that regard, like as something to think about. And that's kind of, I guess, where I keep going with Mackenzie Gore. Like, this dude was a top prospect. Like, he's got skills, so on and so forth. Where you look at Seth Lugo, like, he was a reliever. Like, what in the world went on with that? Where, so it's just kind of a yin and a yang. Like you said, in the end, they're all supposed to be really good pitchers. So how do we decide who figures it out and who doesn't? But with Manaea, if you at least take a step back, the dude was an ace for Oakland. And then just the wheels fell off. Like, he went full freaking Carrot Top hair. Everything went out the window. And then figured it out again. Right. So.
That's how you taught me the Book of Samson.
Yeah. No, that was DeGrom.
No, that was it?
Oh, maybe it was Benoit. I thought it was DeGrom. Either way.
I learned something from you.
So that was... And the facts, folks, here's a little FPAS one-on-one for you.
Oh, where are we going with this?
Ryan's father, Raj, is very disappointed that his son did not know about the story of Samson. And I was going to say, it wasn't just me, folks. The entire table knew what I was talking about. Ryan was alone on this one. So,
Fair enough.
All right. Now you're a guy. Same ADP as Sean Manaea, 267, 75th pitcher off the board. Finished 12th at the position, and I've given you plenty of hat tips on this because I was gave you so much crap when you first brought him up on the preview shows last year. But by the end of my drafting, I had a handful of shares because I believed what you were saying. And this is Jack Flaherty. If you guys didn't know, went to high school with Lucas Giolito and Max Fried. So he's got that going for him. But a 3.17 ERA, 107 whip, slightly better than Sean Manaea. 194 strikeouts, 162 innings pitched, 13 wins, nearly all with the Dodgers because he couldn't get one with the Tigers. But outstanding season from Jack Flaherty. And yeah, that's kudos to you for that one.
Why, thank you. I was almost laughed off the podcast from what I recall. It was starting pitcher preview part three when when I unveiled Flaherty as my guy. I honestly did not think he'd do this. Like, what the hell? This was like vintage Jack Flaherty from what, 2018, 2019, when he was first coming up with St. Louis and Rick looked really good. The thing that got me on Flaherty was really his second half of 2023. There was a pretty big velocity uptick in the slider started to look really good. Took the slider up even further of a notch in 2024. Curveball stayed really good. Fastball stayed good. He held that velocity increase all season long, which again, I don't want to say that's, you know, that there might be a little bit of luck there. A lot of times that velocity increase can lead to an injury, and that's been a big thing with Jack Flaherty throughout his career. But no, awesome season for Jack Flaherty, and something one that is pretty much fully supported by the skills. You've got a 3.17 ERA, 3.10 Sierra. You had a strikeout minus walk of 24%, which is one of the best you'll see among starting pitching. You saw a major increase in swinging strike from 10 to 13% for Jack Flaherty, and the ball rate went down from 39, which is pretty bad, to 36%, which is league average. So he threw more strikes, he got more whiffs, and everything else kind of followed suit. So awesome year for Jack Flaherty. I do think it kind of comes back a little bit next year, but I'll take my victory lap on that one.
Yeah, no, the walks are always an issue with Flaherty. Got that under control, and the results followed. So big one for you on that one. And if we wrap up the 61 through 75, you got three pitchers in the top 20, essentially, if you count Manaea's 21st. That's pretty good this late in the draft.
Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yep. It was kind of boom or bust. There were a lot of bad ones. Canning, Stroman, Gavin Williams, Garrett, Paxton, Gray. But there were those three that were pretty damn solid.
As we go 76 through 90, there's actually a lot better ones over here. If you just think overall production, not like top end production, but just boom for your buck on this one. And this one was not, though. The 76th pitcher off the board, ADP at 272, Trevor Rogers. We just cannot get Trevor Rogers to work. 4.92 ERA, 158 whip, and 97 Ks over 124 innings. Dude was 2-11 through 25 starts. Like, man, again, another frustrating Miami Marlins pitcher.
Absolutely. And I'm afraid Trevor Rogers is just kind of broken.
Yeah.
Obviously Baltimore, you know, there was hay made about that trade with Miami at the deadline, and Baltimore could not fix Trevor Rogers at least yet. Maybe they still see something develop into something next year. I think the biggest thing with Trevor Rogers, in addition to all the injury history that he has, is the fastball. The fastball velocity is now down to 91.9, and you just can't be a good pitcher at that velocity. So that needs to get back up and stay back up for a prolonged period of time. And it certainly didn't happen in 2024. And it just makes it even worse that the two guys picked ahead of Trevor Rogers, and hell, even the couple guys after him were so much better than him in 2024. It that's the salt in the wound.
Yep. Most definitely. Speaking of guys better than him, the 77th pitcher off the board, ADP of 280, Zach Lytle, finished 73rd at the position, 3.63 ERA, 1.25 WHIP, and 141 Ks and 156 innings. Very, very solid stuff from Lytle. The part that always kind of bugged me was just getting him to go deep enough to even have a chance to pick up a win. Yeah. That was always the bugaboo. But if you just wanted ratios and some Ks and the guy, like, again, not to crush you, he turned out to be pretty good when all things were said and done. It had a little injury blurb in the middle there, but all in all, pretty good season.
And that might explain. So Zach Lytle, if we're looking at K-minus walk by month, was elite in April and May, 22 and 20% in April and May, and then had a midseason swoon. It was 11, 14, and then 11% in June, July, August. It was brutal. And again, maybe injury kind of drove that, but rebounded nicely. September, I remember the September for Lytle. Had him on a few draft and holds, was really strong. Got the K minus walk back up to 19%. So really good year for Lytle. He's like the ultimate control artist. 3% walk rate last season, 5% this year, and like doesn't get the most Ks in the world, but but can still, you know, if he can get a league average strikeout rate, which is what we've seen from him in spurts, it'd be pretty good. So not the highest ceiling, but he's fine.
Yep, I'm with you. He's a good, serviceable back-end fantasy starter. Zero concerns there. We'll see where they play this year in Tampa Bay, because I don't think they're ever playing in the Trop again, based on that recent news. About $56 million to fix that thing.
Did you see that? Yeah, $56 million to get it done by 2026.
Six, and they move out in 2028.
So, and it sounds like they will play in either the Yankees or Phillies spring training park in 2028.
That's the one thing, is they got tons of options, but then someone's like, well, it's going to rain all the time down there. Well, deal with it, I guess. It's your only other option. Like, I don't know what to tell them. Like, you don't have a stadium, so unless you're going to share them with Miami.
Oh, yeah, what else are you going to do?
Share it done with Miami. You know, the A's, the Athletics, and the AAA Rivercats are sharing a stadium. Let's go freaking share one in Miami, too. They're basically AAA teams. Go for it. Yeah. So, yeah, don't get me going on that one. All right, here he is, the fourth best pitcher in 2024. The fourth best. He threw 133 innings and was the fourth best pitcher in all of baseball. This is the kind of stuff when we said, man, how many innings does Jacob DeGrom need to be worth his ADP? Mm-hmm. Paul Skenes did this without even realizing it, because he had a 285 ADP, 78th pitcher off the board, finished fourth. He had a 1.96 Pedro-esque ERA with a 0.95 whip and 170 strikeouts and 133 innings pitched. He's the favorite to win the NL Rookie of the Year. I think Jock Samaro should win it, but I have no problems with Paul Skenes winning it. Skenes is also nominated for the NL Cy Young.
Cy Skenes.
Which is nuts to think about from a rookie with 133 innings pitched. Chris Sale's going to win that. But I think we all know how good he was. You can wax poetic with about whatever you want, but yeah. Skenes was ridiculous. He also was on that wonderful Bloom board from FBAS.
He was. That's twice you've called my work wonderful tonight. I like it.
I had a long day with the little ones, so I'm feeling pretty good right about now. Pretty generous.
I don't know. Like, looking back, obviously Skenes being the 78th pitcher off the board at a 285 ADP is like, what were we thinking by letting him drop this far? I didn't have any Paul Skenes. I didn't even think about him. And I guess obviously nobody thought, well, I shouldn't say nobody.
Well, he didn't think come we thought up he'd be May this 11th. Good. He didn't come until May 11th for once. You had to sit with him.
You had to sit with him for a month. And I think, maybe this is just bad memory, I think we thought it would be after that. Like, I think some of the expectation was you might get like half a season out of Paul Skenes and you'd have to hold that spot for half the year. That obviously didn't happen, right? With the May call up. And then on top of that, right, like the DeGrom comp, while just freaking crazy to think about, is pretty spot on. So not only did he get called up early, but like he instantly became, outside of maybe Skubal, Sale, like the best pitcher in baseball, which is just freaking crazy to think about. And something that, like, I don't have a takeaway for. This is like something that does not happen like in the game. This is like a Strasburg, Valenzuela, like this. Yes. That's how often this. That's how rare this is.
Doc Gooden,
Doc. Yes.
Yeah.
So
we'll hate ourselves here. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you will. Fernando. So that's fair.
Yeah, I said Fernando was before Doc.
Yeah, he was, and he was amazing. Rest in peace, as he just passed away recently.
Yep.
So.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, Skenes. I guess is why it's so tough to, you know, he did, like I said, 133 innings, 133 to be the fourth best pitcher. Skubal threw like what, 196 or something, and he was up there, so he had the innings to go with it. Makes it so tough because they're both the top two pitchers off the board right now. If you want them, you definitely have to pay the price. But I don't know. I just can't wrap my head around it. Like you said, too,
and imagine like if in Skenes' spot, while you know who was out, like what if you even had like a James Paxton for that first month and a half who got you a good number of wins like early on, like. That Paul Skenes finishing fourth, that's with missing in over a month. And so you, from an actual like game theory and lineup standpoint, this could have been the number one pitcher. So
and what if you had John Gray in his two good months and then you threw Skenes
right
in behind him?
Now we're talking.
See. Or maybe you had a guy we'll talk about in two picks from now too. All right. The 79th pitcher off the board, ADP of 291, finished 87th at the position. That's Dean Kramer, 4-1 ERA, 1.24 whip, 123 Ks, 129 innings. Spent some time on the IL. Kramer is one of those guys that deep leagues, you streamed him a lot. He was like a bench streamer in deep leagues.
Yeah.
In 12s was more of a drop and pickup streamer because he had his moments where he was really, really solid. And then obviously, if you look at his overall stats, he obviously had some bad moments. So Kramer's a really good pitcher, but not like an every week pitcher.
And I think he stays that way. Like, I don't think there's much of a ceiling with the Dean. Finished strong in September, but like that's very much nitpicking selective sample sizes. For much of the year, Dean Kramer was just blah. And I do remember in 15s, he was like always there as a streaming option. Some weeks he'd be held for a couple weeks and then drop back down. I don't really see Dean Kramer graduating from that. Which is fine, but I mean, he's not terrible, but he's
where you're drafting him, it works,
right?
It's kind of exactly what you're expecting, so it's all good there. Now, this is a guy, if you could have paired with Skeens, would have been awesome. Jordan Hicks, ADP at 291, 80th pitcher off the board, finished 150th at a 4-1 ERA, 1.45 whip, 96 Ks, and 109 innings. Made 20 starts, then went to the bullpen. Started out great, 1.59 ERA in March, April. 3.99 in May, and then it just unraveled from there. Strikeouts were beautiful. I had a ton of Hicks, but if you also listen to the show, I told you to drop him before it hit the wall. Like I was watching games. I said the writing's on the wall on this one. Jump, run away. Not everybody did. I still don't know what to expect from this year though, because he made those 20 starts or 109 innings, and then he had the shoulder injury. So. Yeah. Really rough, like, second half of the season for Jordan Hicks.
Yeah, and this is one, like, we think about the Ronaldo Lopez, Garrett Crochet, that kind of reliever to starter transition, how well it went for a lot of these guys. Jordan Hicks, it went well for a little bit, but you're right. The writing was very much on the wall there. He tried to extend himself, right? I think his fastball velo dropped, like, 4 or 5 miles an hour.
Yep.
But, yeah, just ran out of gas, which is what I thought a lot of those guys would do, and it turned out it was pretty much just Jordan Hicks.
Yep. The 81st pitcher off the board, ADP of 292, finished 155th at the position, Frankie Montas, 4.84 ERA, 1.37 whip, 148 Ks, 150 innings. Got traded to Milwaukee and kind of had a new lease on life. It felt like at least in August, and it kind of blew up again in September. But his first month with the Brewers, Frankie Montas looked pretty, pretty good.
Yeah. I guess. I think Frankie Montas is that good.
You hate Frankie Montas.
I don't know why. I don't hate him, but I'm sure he's a good dude. But I don't know. He's blah. He's 155th pitcher. Hey, it's not good.
Somebody needs – we draft a lot of pitchers, so you kind of need it. No, kid. It's making it up as
it's
I go.
It's bad.
It's bad. It's fine. God. Be nice. The 82nd pitcher off the board, ADP at 294. Chris Paddock finished 153. He finished hurt. He's looking good there for a little bit, and then it just boom with dynamite for Chris Paddock as well.
Yep, agreed. Don't have too much to add on that one.
All right, now a fun one here, a guy that I had pitching a lot towards the end of the season, Michael Waka Waka Waka, 83rd pitcher off the board, 295 ADP, finished 36th at the position. The ageless wonder had a 3.35 ERA, a 1.19 whip, and a 1.45 strikeouts in 166 innings, made 29 starts. Just freaking awesome stuff there for like the third straight season of just being a stud pitcher that we like to clown on because the strikeouts aren't there, which is fair. But if you want to talk ratios and just giving you a chance to get wins, 13 wins, 14 wins, 11 wins in the last three seasons, Waka's been outstanding for where you draft him each and every year.
Yeah, I almost kind of want to do a bloom board of starting pitchers with like 120 innings in each of the last three seasons, a sub 120 whip and a sub 350 ERA. Like, I'm sure there's a good amount, but like Michael Waka being one of them is like, damn, he would stand out. That's pretty, I think, elite, consistently elite company. And and then you add the win totals, like you said, on top of that. I don't know how Michael Waka is doing this again. Going back to my Seth Lugo thing, maybe I'm sure Kansas City knows something I don't. But no, another awesome season for Michael Waka, who has, yes, now been doing this for 3 years in a row, which is which is pretty wild to think about.
Yes, indeed. Ranger Suarez, 84th pitcher off the board, 2.98 ERA, 44th pitcher this season. So we got a couple very nice values with Waka and then Suarez. Ranger had a 3.46 ERA, 1.2 whip, 145 strikeouts, and 150 innings. Had an injury towards the end of the season, but there was a stretch there where Ranger was as automatic as it came, just shutting dudes down. Almost, he had a Kikuchi run, but Kikuchi kept it going where Ranger got hurt.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, Ranger, this is at least partially true. he was the number.
we have partial truth on this show. The rest of it, you got to figure out on your own.
Your boy McAfee's guest today is. I saw those tweets
everywhere. Oh boy.
But Rangers.
This isn't blue sky. You can say his name.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers is out here quoting fictitious fake
Twitter stats. Yeah. He got.
Yes, he did. So this may be partially true, but through a good chunk of the first half, Ranger Suarez was the number one starting pitcher in 2024. Yeah, like fair. The start was so good for Ranger Suarez, and I don't think we realize how much it unraveled for Ranger Suarez. So a 2.27 ERA, 0.99 WHIP in the first half for Ranger, that went to 6.04 and 1.66. In the second half, Ranger Suarez missed a month with lower back soreness. So you obviously wonder, was he right? But Ranger Suarez, this was, you want to talk about a tale of two halves, like the best pitcher in baseball for the first half and then one of the worst in the second half. So it always goes back to that question of like, how long did you hold on to Ranger or at least start him until you finally realize like, oh, this isn't the same guy anymore. That speed at which you make that decision could have changed things for you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The 85th pitcher off the board, ADP of 300, Casey Mize finished 176th. And the Tigers didn't even bring him back for 2025. So he's a free agent right now. Once the top pick, I believe, in baseball, it's just unraveled for Casey Mize, injuries and poor production.
Yep, pretty much, though I actually kind of like Casey Mize for 2025. I think he's a pretty good dart throw. Had a hamstring injury that pretty much cost him all of July and August.
Bring him to the Giants.
He'd be fine in the Giants.
I'm fine with it. Like, they want to quote unquote save money, so come on down.
Yeah. No, disappointing year for Mize, but I think there's still something there.
Yeah, there's always something. I tell myself that every time I wake up in the morning. Andrew Abbott,
you kind of knock your head. Yeah, there's something in there. There's
something there as the back hurts and the hip hurts and the knees hurt. Yeah, there's something there. Andrew Abbott, the 86th pitcher off the board, ADP of 302, finished 79th. So I guess in the end worked out, but 3.72, 1.3 whip, 114 Ks, 138 innings, pitches to so much contact and scares the crap out of me in Great America. Even though he seems to pitch just fine at home, I can't get behind it at all.
Yeah, he does seem to pitch fine at home, but you're right. It's a lot of contact and not many ground balls, which is not a formula for success in Andrew Abbott's home park.
Yeah. Hunter Green got away with it this year, too. Maybe they used a different humidor or something this year.
How did he finish 79th? I guess a 3.72 ERA is pretty
good. ERA is good. He was serviceable. I just never would have started him to save my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's the man of the bottom part of this hour, Ronaldo Lopez, 87th pitcher off the board, ADP of 304, finished 18th at the position. And check this, Oregon Duck Green, 1.99 ERA, 1.11 whip, 148 Ks, and 135 innings pitched. Little stint on the IL, but dude, when he pitched, it was at least five, usually six innings, 1 to 2 runs. Less than a K per inning. Actually, had a K per inning. Like, the dude was just automatic is what it came down to with Ronaldo Lopez. And we all kept waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right.
Never did. That's crazy.
The thing. I mean, it somewhat dropped with the injury, but not. I mean,
he came back and pitched fine.
He came back September. He was good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just kind of that perfect blend with any career year like this, perfect blend of some pretty damn good skills, but also anyone who has a 1.99 ERA, not named Paul Skeens, there's a bit of luck involved, But even like the ERA estimators for Lopez, Reynaldo Lopez is mid threes. He pitched very well. And we were just kind of waiting for like the Jordan Hicks thing to happen again. And again, he did get hurt, but that never really happened. So awesome year for Reynaldo Lopez. 1.99 ERA is just, that's crazy, man. And finish the better Lopez. If you had told me before the season, Reynaldo over Pablo. Be kidding me, man.
We had some good odds on that one. That was some good odds.
Yep.
All right, the 88th pitcher off the board. ADP of 306. It's almost Christmas time, folks. When you watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, there'll be a lumberjack, a portly fella, who will resemble Lance Lynn, or he resembles him, either way. Lynn finished 104th. And honestly, I thought he was better than this. He had the 3.84 ERA with the 1.34 whip and 109 strikeouts in 117 innings. Like, he was pretty serviceable, all things considered. Always hurt. Knee got hurt. When you're that big, the knees give out. That's all I'm going to say. So, like, I love the man. He's just like, he's the epitome of DGAF on the mound. And things might be catching up with the old fella these days.
just sweating it out, too.
Man, humiliates with those jerseys. Oh, it's glorious.
Lance Lynn was like the poster boy for the 2024 MLB uniform.
Yes.
Because, God, I don't think we're going to see those uniforms again. Thank God.
Not.
But seeing Lance Lynn and those bad boys over the summertime, I remember they wore like the baby blue Cardinals uniform one time at home, like in August.
Yes.
God, it was.
It turned into navy blue by the end of it.
Yeah,
in certain regions, I should say, not the whole thing, but a lot of it
in there. Hey, was a effective stream his last start. Yes. He came back for one start, pitched six innings, got a win, and then they
knee injury finished him off. Like I want Lynn to be good, but it's just he seems to not care, and it's just kind of where it's at. He's a free agent, so we'll see what happens this year.
Yeah, that was good analysis on Lynn. I like that. I like that one.
Yeah,
well, not a single number involved.
Well, because if people know the show enough, like Ryan and I would legit text each other pictures when we see Lance Lynn on the mound because it was just like the greatest. It made us laugh every time we saw it. It's a tough one there. Yeah. All right, the 89th pitcher off the board, ADP of 311, finished 34th at the position. That's Tanner Houck, 3.12 ERA, a 1.14 WHIP, 154 strikeouts. And I'll give us one of our listener questions right here. Thomas Travato said, I need a Tanner Houck review. He faded so hard down the stretch due to his increased innings. What can we reasonably expect moving forward? You mentioned those innings. Tanner Houck threw 178 innings after throwing 106 the previous year. Prior to that, 60, 69, and 17 in the bigs. Big innings increase for Tanner Houck. Good season overall, but definitely, definitely could not finish strong. So what's your thoughts, Ryan, as Thomas Travato was curious?
It was weird because you would think like the velocity would go down from first to second half, but not for Houck. Let me check his September. 93.9. It was actually 93.9 was August and September was both 93.9, which was the highest fastball velocity of any month for Tanner Houck. So that's kind of weird. But the rest of the skill set just totally tanked, like everything. So I'm going to kind of list the common stats. We have to make up for the Lance Lynn thing with some more numbers here. But the swinging strike for Houck went from 11 down to 9. That's really bad. Totally lost control. So this is probably just like a mechanical thing where he's just if any little part gets fatigued or gets thrown off, the control can go. And a 38% ball rate for Tanner Houck in the second half could not hit water from the boat. And it showed with Tanner Houck's finish. So the good thing is kept an elite ground ball rate going all season. So I like that. Question for 2025, of course, is going to be, you know, which half do we believe? I tend to believe more of the first half.
Yes.
As long as there's something that's like not totally wrong with him that carries over. There's no reason to believe that. I think he just got tired. And when you pitch 174, whatever inning, 178 for the first time, it's going to happen. So,
yeah, he also fits the bucket of giant innings increased. What do we get next year situation? That's always my concern. But with how, yeah, I don't know. I'm just always worried about these guys. Maybe I'm overly worried these days. Last one off the board here, Max Meyer, 313 ADP, 90th pitcher, finished 161. Only had a couple starts. Saw him way too late in the year, then didn't see him again for a while. Don't have a whole lot more on Max Meyer. Like, the talent's there, typical Marlins situation.
Yeah, one of the more puzzling workload management things. He just went away for a while, and that was pretty much it.
Yep, never really got back to what we were hoping for with Max Meyer. All right, Ryan, that wraps up 90 starting pitchers. But you, my friend, have some breakouts. Anybody you'd like to discuss on the list, or you can just list them off? Doesn't matter to me.
I'll list them off, and we can just hit on one or two or something. All right, so here we got. So breakouts, or anybody not picked in the top 90 that finished in the top 40. Completely arbitrary, but that's what I felt like doing. We had, and some of these numbers, well, we'll see. We had Ronel Blanco. Ronel Blanco, of all people, a 421 wow. ADP. Ronel Blanco finished 13th starting pitcher per the Fangraphs player rater, which is just absolutely wild. Like, I didn't think he had that great of a year, but I looked at the numbers and it was crazy. He was. Luis Gil, 329 ADP, so not too far behind Max Meyer, finished 29th. Nick Martinez, 401 ADP. Another kind of bullpen to rotation transition gone right. Nick Martinez finished 27th. Notice we haven't said Garrett Crochet yet.
Well,
he's next.
Foreshadow? Oh.
325 ADP, but Bubba finished 31st.
Because 31st starting pitcher. I'd love to know where he was ranked before they shut him down, essentially.
I know. I did not think Garrett Crochet, even knowing like he got no wins or innings in the last month or two of the season, 31st seems low, but I don't know.
Wait a second real quick.
Just go ahead.
Check this. So if we just do the 2024 first half for pitchers, Garrett Crochet was 11th.
Where was my guy Ranger? Partially going back to my partially true statement.
Ranger Suarez was 10th in the first half.
He was first.
Yeah, somewhere he was. Probably the first month. But yeah, I know they have the first. They have a first half. So Ranger was 10th. Garrett Crochet was 11th before things started shifting.
Okay. So yeah, Garrett Crochet finished 31st. Jameson Taillon. This is
a surprise.
Yeah, this surprised me. 422 ADP, finished 33rd. So Taillon finished two spots behind Garrett Crochet. which is just nuts. Bowden Francis, 375 ADP, finished 39th. And then Spencer Schwellenbach, completely undrafted, almost unheard of, finished 40th starting pitcher.
And Schwellenbach's interesting because they went through so many other quote-unquote prospects before they got to him with all their injuries they had. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait, this guy's actually good. Let's stick with him a little longer. And it just worked.
Yep.
And now he's a staple for now in that rotation and a high draft pick and fun stuff there. So yeah, that was big. Crochet's the fun one because it was tilting. He's going to get traded before the season starts, it looks like. But it was out of like – it was announced like the final week of spring that he's going to be the opening day starter. Dude's never made a start in his entire life.
Yeah.
And just beast mode. And then – and he, even in the four-inning starts, because everything was four innings, pitched great, and then it was just over.
Yeah, and I don't like the takeaway on that for next year. Like, who's the next Garrett Crochet? I mean, that's going to be impossible.
Yeah,
I mean, through missed all of 2022, missed pretty much all of 2023 with Tommy John, through 12 innings in 2023. Those 12 innings were not good. where did this come from? I don't know. Smart people saw it coming, or at least a version of this coming. But kudos if you got him. I guess the reason Crochet finished 31st or whatever was, yeah, the six wins. And also the ERA was 3.58. Like, that's not that good, actually.
It felt like that came later in the season. Could be totally speaking out of my, kind of Ranger Suarez first overall.
He had a rough stretch.
But, yeah, he had a couple starts where things were not ideal. Let's put it that way.
Crochet had a stretch of starts. It was early in April, 5.75.
There you go.
Earned runs, and then he had a 7 earned run one later in August, right before.
That was the one I remembered, yes.
Yeah, that was during his kind of slowdown period. So
yeah, that was a bloodbath. So, yeah, Crochet's awesome. Nick Martinez, actually, I didn't think he was that good, but everyone's been raving about him. He finished 27th, so that stands out in a big way to me. They offered him that qualifying offer with the Reds, so he's probably going to jump all over that, I'd imagine, at 21 mil. Could be wrong, but I'd imagine he jumps all over that. But 142 innings. It just wasn't the strikeouts, though. Like, you know, 17.2% K to walks, fine, but it's like a 7K per 9, so he wasn't, like, blowing the doors off of things. And started the year in the bullpen. Wasn't even like a guy that used to be a reliever, started the season as a starter. He transitioned like mid-season, which really, I think, threw a lot of things off. But his overall rank, he still had 10 wins. 142 innings, though, with only 16 starts is pretty strong. That's a different way to kind of get you ready to start full-time in the next season. The opposite of the Garrett Crochet method. So that's kind of fun, too.
Jameson Taillon, just because I did not even know he was good this year. But yeah, 113 whip, 327 ERA, 165 innings of those ratios. It looks like beneath the hood, this was the same exact Jameson Taillon that we've seen in recent seasons. Actually worse, like career low strikeout rate.
Taillon to me, like I wrote him up last year on my Substack for a late round DC guys. So stuff you'll see at the Bubba and the Loon Patreon this year, if you were to sign up. But I just love them for his ADP because, like, in a 15 team, especially in a draft and hold, boring pitches innings, I guess, is what he does. Did I think he'd be 33rd overall? Not a chance in hell. But he rarely gets just destroyed for like multiple starts. Like, he's just going to kind of hang around and do his thing and quality starts you to death, basically. And that's what he ended up doing. So the strikeouts is that the drop in K's was a little disappointing, though.
Yeah, that's something you can do. I mean, the walk rate, Town's always been a control artist. That you can pitch deep into games doing that, but it's just when you allow a lot of contact, you're just very much at the whims of the pitching gods. Sometimes they're friendly, sometimes they're not.
And then the one guy I'll mention, Bowden Francis, I have no idea what to do with him this year. I'm just
gonna throw that out there. I know, me neither, dude.
I have zero clue.
He still pisses me off too much for me to even think about him.
Because like the under the hood stuff looked like he should have been getting hit all over the ballpark.
And we both screened him
one strikeout in that near perfect game or whatever. Like the dude just pitch to contact guys I can't stand. I can't stand them, and he wasn't always a pitch to contact, but you know what I'm trying to say. There's a lot more. Like, he was more Jameson Taillon than Garrett Crochet. So, like, it's very tilting.
And another one where how do you predict? Because Bowden Francis was legitimately really good when he first came back the second time, if that makes any sense. I forget what – I want to say that was like July or August. Yeah. No, that was
– something like that.
August.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had 39 strikeouts and 34 innings in August with a 105 ERA .4 whip. That was when I rid my hands at Bowden Francis. I got him. Probably you did too in April.
Yes.
When our guy threw 14 innings of an 8.59 ERA and 170 whip. So thank you, Bowden Francis, for that.
So then just for fun here, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, like 2, 4, 6, 7. So if you count the 7 breakouts and then the 61 through 90, there was 15 pitchers after pitch 61 that finished in the top 44. 16.
Yeah.
In the top 44. And so kind of bringing it full circle to all of our reviews here. Yeah, you got to hit early. There's no denying that. But like Ryan said, even on this show, is you somehow grab one of these guys, not so much the Paul Skenes, because I think that was just an out-of-this-world experience, but the Manias, the Flaherty's. You could say Lugo. I think it's kind of a weird bug. You get those kind of guys that just are automatic starts here. And then these other guys, the breakout dudes, game changers. I know it's simple to think about, like common sense, duh, Bubba, you're an idiot. Sure. But the fact that there are 16 of them, or 15 of them, 15 after ADP 213, that says a lot.
And this is why when I start doing my prep and my starting pitcher rankings available on the Patreon compared to yours, this is where I start. I want to focus my effort on, we all know the good guys are good. And yes, it's important to not miss early on, but if you really hone in on this, like ADP 200 to 300 or 150 to 300, you know what, that general range, if you can kind of nail, and sometimes it's just luck. I mean, like I said, Seth freaking Lugo, but like, if you nail some of these guys, this is where really you should be putting your effort in terms of draft prep and player analysis is nailing a few of these guys if you can.
If you can, that's where the Flaherty of yours came in a big way. And if you can figure these ones out, you're good to go. And just looking at early drafts, there's a lot of fun later picks to kind of decipher, which will be fun when we do our preview show in a month or so on these ones to kind of get a feel for it. But it's not that far away. It'll be like January, but not that far away when all things are said and done. Yeah. All right, let's do a couple of listener questions, then we'll head out of here on a Tuesday evening. We got Dish 12. That's a new one. Good to have him on the show here. Outside of Skeens, any commonalities between the handful of guys who drastically overperformed Lugo, Flaherty, Manaea, Lopez, Hauk? It was like a notable pitch mix change, pitching coach philosophy, just new environment opportunity. Honestly, if you look at all of these guys except Hauk, it's all new places. I'll say that much. Not saying that's the reason, but we've already talked multiple times how a new philosophy and a new location can do that. And Hauk, I don't know if they got a new pitching coach or not, but he'd be the only one.
That was certainly a role change. So that's an interesting point. That's one that I had not thought of. Maybe we do take a deeper dive into pitchers that have changed teams entering 2025 and see if there's something that, like, just from a pitch mix standpoint can be optimized. So that makes a ton of sense. You did have with Ronaldo Lopez and Tanner Houck, you had the reliever to starter transition, which I'm, and yes, Jordan Hicks was part of that, but we just mentioned Nick Martinez as well.
Yep.
That's something I think and obviously Garrett Crochet, forget him. That's something I'm going to be a little bit more lenient on if a pitcher doesn't have
it. Rounds.
Exactly. If a pitcher doesn't have like a season over 80 innings, but he's a good reliever and they want to go to they're moving to the rotation, I don't think that's a demerit against them based on what we saw this year. So,
and Michael Cicchini says, and Boston got the driveline guy, new pitching coordinators this year. So there you go.
Yeah.
Could be new philosophies for all those teams, new teams, new situation for Hauk. But and it makes sense taking more chances at this part of the draft too. We talk about it all the time. Most of these guys are dropping or streaming. Most of these guys don't stick anyways. So you're moving on type situations. Take your chances.
Yes, I agree with you. The counter,
if they stick, it's awesome.
What if you took boring old Seth Lugo?
Well, then if he sticks, it's awesome. You roll with it.
So.
I'm not saying you don't do it. I'm saying in general, if you want to take chances, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
To your point about the innings thing.
Yep, absolutely. I'll just say, we talked about Flaherty, but Flaherty, but I'm a big second half, first half pitcher split person. If there's a pitch mix change or a bump in velocity, Flaherty, check those boxes as well. So that was the big driver for me with Flaherty this season. So.
All right, Thomas Travato says, how cool was SP depth for dart throws in 2024? Yeah, I mentioned 15 guys after ADP 213. That's pretty impressive there. What did we miss from these guys in 2023 that could have predicted this success? A lot of role changes. We've talked about that.
Yeah, it's kind of a similar question, I believe, if I'm understanding the two correctly. But,
Yep, just deeper dive into new faces, new places type thing. And see where it goes there. Or, you know, you had Francis, who was a young gun. Spencer Schwellenbach wasn't even on the radar. So on and so. Like, Luis Eel was a rookie. Blanco, I don't think anybody expected that. I don't know how you could have predicted the Blanco one. Travato also says, like, for instance, Lugo not valued properly. Raylo, the improvement was there. Hauk, Manaea, pitch mix, arm slot changes, Flaherty, injuries. Who is doing this in 2025 in this range? We'll tell you more in January. But we'll try to give you some tidbits up till then. But I know, I don't think Ryan's looked a ton into that yet, and I haven't dug that much into it.
I have not yet, but I will be drafting. I still say December. I'm going to hold off, I think, till December.
Maybe next week.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's right. Maybe next week. I mean, like, I don't want to say real drafts, but like drafting holds. Gladiators are just, they're fun.
Dust off the draft board, Bloomfield. You're welcome. I'm a bad influence, my friend. Bad influence for you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Did you announce that at the beginning of the show?
No. That was all off the air. We're working on that. Nothing's finalized yet, but the goal sometime next week. But if you're in the Patreon, you'll find out right away. Just throwing that out there to you in the Discord. All right, Ryan, any final thoughts? That'll wrap up SP Review 3. That'll wrap up our starting pitcher reviews. Again, we'll be recording relief pitchers in the next days, and we'll release it to you on Friday, so we'll not be live. But anything else for you on this one?
No, I think we just talked about 90 starting pitchers in the last three episodes,
so. And we hit every one of them. I didn't like skip any,
and like legitimately talked about every single one. So I hope, I mean, let us know. I thought it was good to just go back through and kind of think what we were thinking this time a year ago. If you all like the format, let us know. But it was a fun ride. It was a fun ride through all these. Yeah, we'll do closers. We'll do the same thing. We'll do top 30 closers. I'll make that board on Wednesday, and we'll talk about the closer pool to round it out for reviews on 2024.
Yep, round out the reviews. And like I said, we'll get going with move on to 2025 starting next week. But we'll get all that covered for you. And I hope these have been helpful again. Look forward to 2025. I look forward to getting Ryan's brain moving in that direction, getting ready to draft with the rest of us. Yes. And seeing where it goes, because he's almost done with the forecaster. Like, it's got to almost be done. So it's time to click it in gear and see where we go here. So
yeah, we're about 10 days away from the deadline for the forecaster. A lot of editing to do, but the player boxes are pretty much done. So it's getting there.
It's where we close. My goal is to get done with my Black Book stuff by Thanksgiving. So I have till December 1st, but I'm trying to be done by Thanksgiving, so I don't have to worry about it type thing. So,
yeah.
Yep. Well, now Thanksgiving is almost December 1st. Now it's back as far as usual. I was thinking like
20. Far ahead.
It's weird. Okay. I know people can turn off the show now if you want, but this is one thing. I was golfing with some guys the other day. Like, he sent Ryan pictures. He was pissed. He's like, "Do you ever work?" And
the day after first pitch,
I landed on Monday, was golfing on Tuesday. It was for work, though. It was a work deal. And, we were talking and we're trying to figure out our schedule. I'm like, yeah, Thanksgiving is not till like the 28th. And I don't know. I grew up always thinking it was always the third Thursday in November, but it's the fourth Thursday this year. So it's always the last Thursday, I guess. Is that what it is?
It's the fourth Thursday.
But not, yeah, I'm an every idiot, year. So. I mean, I wasn't alone.
Dude, you can't like, the whole, make fun the whole of me group. For not knowing Samson, and you don't know Thanksgiving's the fourth Thursday of November every year.
I didn't invent the calendar. I don't know. But hey, tell me when Easter is. Figure that one out, genius.
That one I can't help you with. Sometimes it's in March, April. That I can't help you with.
That one's crazy. But all right, I figured I'd go down a rabbit hole just for fun because, Kevin Hastings, Thanksgiving's only 3 days.
really setting the bar high there by using the deadline by 3 days.
23rd or 24th or something. God, this is a tough crowd here on a Tuesday night. So we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you've stuck around this long, you're welcome.
God help you.
You're welcome. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanVH, Hugh the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and myself on Twitter at BDN Trick. Until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 186. Catch you all later.